Today is Tuesday, October 11, 2011, and this is Amran's Podcast, episode 265. Kia ora. See, I'm mixing it up a bit today. Just mixing it up. Today's episode is called Progress Report, because it's been quite a while since my last studio podcast, or regular podcast. In fact, that was on September 17th, so what's that, better part of a month ago. And so I've got a lot to update on, and I'm going to talk about that first. And then I'm going to talk about the news. See, still mixing it up. And finally, comments, as usual, to round out the episode. But first, progress report. This past few days, we've been entertaining our nieces at school holidays in New Zealand. So they came up with their dad on Saturday to stay with us. And actually, he came up with another of his sisters, and she stayed with the sister who lives here in Auckland. And so we all had a big family barbecue on Saturday, and found out that we have to replace our table and chairs. The wood has aged too much, and now we need new ones. And they're about 5 or 6 years old, I guess, and they have not survived. And I was going to repaint them and reuse them for another season, but no, it's not going to last through this season, so we've got to get something new that was not planned for. But, you know, sometimes you have to do what you have to do. And anyway, so they joined us for the Third Colony on farpointradio.com this past Sunday, and which is actually why we did the show. If they hadn't wanted to do it, then we probably wouldn't have done the show. I don't know. I don't know if we would have or not. But asking them to entertain themselves for a couple of hours, even with the Wii, it's probably a bit much. So, but they were quite keen to do the show, and it turns out they're naturals. And we had a lot of fun, and obviously they did too, which is kind of the whole point. But of course, the week leading up to that was the busiest work week of the month for me, and I'm pleased to report that this month went much better than it has in recent months. I was done with the initial phase of the project by Friday, and I haven't reached that point in months. I actually couldn't tell you without looking how long it's been, but it's been many, many months, I think. And so, yeah, it all went reasonably well, and that bodes well for the future, I think, I hope. But I made some organizing changes, and they seem to have paid off, which is the important thing. And actually, organizing is the main thing I've been up to. I can't remember if I talked about this before or not, but one of the big projects that I've been engaged in is, well, the overall project is making this house more of what we want. Since we decided not to move, we decided to make this house more along the lines of what we were looking for. And that's why we built the deck out front, the big new deck out front. But we also need to get more storage inside the house and get the what is here more efficiently organized. And, of course, part of that, too, is getting rid of junk, stuff that we no longer use or want or what have you. And so that's what I've been engaged in the past several weeks. And a few weeks ago, I went up to local home center and bought shelves for the walk-in wardrobe in the master bedroom. They're from Rubbermaid. I can't remember what the actual line is called. But the way it works is there's a strip, this metal track that you screw to the studs or the noggins or what have you, into wood, basically. And then there are these uprights that hook onto that track and hang down, and then the shelves lock into that. There's a similar system from Elba, which is much more expensive. It's about two or three times the price. But this is every bit as good. And especially for something like a wardrobe that you're never going to see, it is a much more practical solution. So I did that not this past week, but the week before. I installed it all. What was in there actually was something which it's kind of interesting to me that they were the sort of shelves that, I don't know, I guess it's like a coated wire sort of product. They're white and they've got this kind of rubbery kind of coating on them. And they have these metal, and they go into these hooks or whatever on the wall to hold them to the wall. And then on the front side, there are these poles that sort of hook into them as well, but they're not attached to anything. And there was a time when I would have killed to have that sort of wardrobe organization. I think it was back in the 80s. I wanted it so badly, although I was living in rental apartments and I certainly wasn't going to put them in, but I really wanted it. And then I ended up in a house that had them, but they just didn't work. They were configured all wrong, basically. So the advantage of this sort of system that I did get is that it's completely flexible. You can keep rearranging it to your heart's content. You can remove uprights if you want. You can extend the uprights so they go further down to the floor. You can move the shelves around any sort of way you want. And so I did it one way, and then we weren't sure we liked it that way. So I did it another way. Now we're going back to basically the way I had it in the first place. Isn't it always the way? So that's what I'm doing today after I'm done recording. But as part of this process, everything had to come out of the wardrobe, obviously. And it's not a huge wardrobe. It's walk-in because, well, you can. But it's a small room. I mean, I think it's a meter and a half by 2 meters, maybe something. Well, maybe a bit more than that. Anyway, it's not huge, but it's, you know, meets our needs. And so everything came out of that. It was all over the house. And I actually went up to the storage store and bought one of those coat racks. That's, you know, it's on wheels and stuff. So I would have somewhere to hang stuff that was coming out of the wardrobe. And that's actually worked out really well. And that has a new future too. And it's going to go in the garage. And that's where I'm going to hang shirts to dry. I'm going to take them out of the washer because I don't dry shirts. Anyway, I'm way off topic. The clothes that I've taken out of the wardrobe had to be gone through. Is that however you put that? Because we've accumulated this stuff over years. And some of the stuff is stuff that we either can't wear or won't wear ever again. And it's silly to just keep it and have to store it and look after it for nothing. So I said to Nigel that both of us were going to have to do this actually frequently and over again. But with respect to the clothes, that we had to make a choice. We didn't there was no requirement to throw anything away if we didn't want to, but we had to make a decision. So we could decide to keep it, and that was perfectly fine, or we could decide to toss it because it was irreparable in some way, unsalvageable, or we could donate it to a charity shop. So we didn't actually have a whole lot so far. We haven't had a whole lot to throw away, just socks and underwear that are irreparable at this stage. And they had been stored in bags in the wardrobe. I still don't really know why, but we kept them anyway. But they're gone. And we have a large and sort of growing pile of stuff that's going to go to the charity shop, clothes that we just don't want anymore for whatever reason, either because it's the wrong size or just don't like it anymore, whatever. Going to get rid of it. And we're going to repeat that process in the other wardrobes and in other stuff that's just around the house everywhere. And this has become my priority for two reasons. First of all, because we're planning on having Christmas at home again this year, partly to break in the new deck, but also, and we've got the space, but also just because we kind of feel like we want to. And in order for that to happen, we really want to get the house sorted. And the other thing is that I realized recently that having this to do, and having had it to do for so long now, is really dragging me down because it's always there. There's never a point where I'm just in routine maintenance mode where it's just, you know, cleaning and tidying or what have you. It's always, well, I've got to go through that wardrobe, got to sort out that stuff. And it's been frustrating me because it's been one of these situations where I can't do X until I do Y, and I can't do Y until I do Z. And I can't do that until I do B, and I can't do that until I do G, and I can't do that until I do H. It's been really, really frustrating. And so I just started with one room, the master bedroom, and I'm doing the wardrobe first. Then I'm going to clear out the drawers and the dressers and so on and get all the any junk remaining, I don't think there will be by then, in the bedroom out. And then that will be fresh and clean and ready to go. And then I'm going to move on through the other rooms one at a time, and with a goal of being completely done by Christmas. And that means that all of that is going to be off my agenda for the first time in years, and I can do other stuff, including podcasting, which is my next topic. I have talked frequently about reviving my live shows, and I certainly plan on doing that, but I don't know how I'm going to do that. I'm still a bit stuck on that, because this podcast is kind of a... it's sort of got its form, I guess. It's about me, obviously, but it's also about being an expat. It's also about New Zealand. And there are people who listen to it for one or more of those reasons. And any sort of live show I would do would be different. It would actually be closer to too political than it would be to this particular podcast. And I actually have talked to Jason about doing Too Political as a live show. But the problem is that we don't record on a regular schedule, and we wouldn't be able to, you know, set a particular time to always do the show. So I don't think that's going to happen, but we might do something else instead. Probably not. Probably just be me. I don't know. See, all of this is still up in the air. And it probably won't start until the new year anyway, because, as I said, I've got this big organizing project that I'm in the middle of right now. But it is something I'm planning on bringing back soon. And I will certainly have more details once I've worked it all out. One of the things I have considered doing for this podcast, as I've talked about before, is tagging it in a way that would allow people to subscribe to just the stuff they're interested in. So if they're not really interested in what I'm up to and whether my work week went well or not, they can just subscribe to stuff about New Zealand or shows about being an expat, stuff like that. And or video podcasts, for instance, which I'm also going to be doing more of now that the weather's getting better. So there's all this sort of stuff going on in my head. And now that I'm starting to get the house organized and cleared out, that gives me more space in my head to think about what I'm going to be doing. So if you have any strong feelings about any of this, do let me know, because I'm always willing to, you know, try to take on the ideas of others and what they would like to see and hear and so on. I'm not going to regiment this particular podcast or turn it into one of those ones that's filled with segments and, you know, set things and all that sort of stuff, because I've always preferred to do this one as a bit more free flowing. But I'm certainly open to the idea of doing more structured ones on different topics or different subject areas rather. So if you have any strong feelings about what you'd like to hear, do let me know and I will work on that. But now I am going on to the news, and the main news is the election, and I'm not doing the election update thingy because this isn't really an election update as such. The election is a little over 6 weeks away. It's on November 26th, which is, of course, a Saturday. Our elections are always held on Saturdays. Just yesterday, we received the official information on the referendum, and, of course, I've already decided how I'm voting on that. I'm voting to keep MMP. And other decisions are getting a bit closer. I'm reasonably certain about what I'm going to do with my electorate vote now. But of course, under MMP, I have two votes, the electorate vote and the party vote. And the party vote one is still giving me some trouble. I haven't been able to decide exactly what I'm going to do. But ultimately, probably next week, maybe the week after, I'm going to do a special episode just about what I've decided. And, so that's coming up. There is a little interesting thing about that, which is why I sort of hesitated for a moment there. Under the electoral law in New Zealand, electoral law, I can post that, and I don't have to take it down on election day, but I can't refer to it or point to it in any way at the top of the page. Which is one of the reasons why I want to do it as soon as is reasonably practical, basically as soon as I've made up my mind, because that way it'll get pushed down the page and it won't be on the front page anybody who lands there. And actually, the show title probably won't say specifically that my decision, well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that because I don't know what I'm going to call it yet, do I? The same thing is true on my blog. I can have things on there promoting a candidate or a whatever, my position in the referendum. And I don't have to take them down either, apparently, but the ads. But I do have to, again, same thing. I can't refer to them or call attention to them or draw people to them in any way, which is kind of weird. So I think that if I do put any ads, because it would just be my putting the ads, not, you know, anybody else buying them, if I do that, I will almost certainly take them down before Election Day, which would be a good idea to do anyway, I think. So, yeah, I don't know. So much of this is still unclear because of the changing nature of social media and stuff like that. I just had to stop and do a little cough because I'm not used to talking on the podcast machine. Related to this in a roundabout sort of way was an incident that happened in Parliament last week. Or is it a week before now? Jeez, one tends to forget such things. It was probably was about a week ago or so. Anyway, there's this guy in the public gallery who suddenly decided to try to jump over the railing and land on the House floor, and he was stopped and wrestled pulled away by members of the public, helped, and also security and so on. They took him away, and he has mental issues, and he's going to be receiving mental health care, which is, you know, all well and good. But there was a problem when that happened. The leader of the opposition was just starting to speak when it happened, and so the guy tried to jump over, and some of the other MPs jumped to their feet, and they had shocked looks on their face, as you would expect. And then the prime minister, the leader of the National Party, John Key, yelled across the floor, "Shame on Labour." And he also said, "You should be ashamed of yourselves. That's down to you guys," meaning Labour. Now, there's no way you could hear that and not assume that the prime minister was talking about the fact that this guy tried to jump onto the floor of the debating chamber. And that's absolutely what he meant. I cannot, for the life of me, see how anybody could ever assume he meant anything other than that. I mean, shame on Labour, he says. "You guys should be ashamed of yourself. That's down to you guys," meaning Labour. So what is down to those guys? The guy tried to jump over the railing, so it's their fault that he tried to do that. So he's either suggesting that there was a stunt organized by Labour, or that Labour had riled up people to try to jump into the debating chamber. I don't know. Well, the prime minister, of course, now denies that. He said, "Well, I never meant that of the kind." And a spokesperson for the prime minister said that, "Oh, that was a reflection on the Labour Party's criticism of the Diplomatic Protection Security detail, the DPS. Actually, I don't think it's Diplomatic Protection Security. Anyway, that's what the article called. Anyway, and that's nonsense. There is no way that that's what the prime minister was meaning when he said that. And the issue there is that Labour has been critical of the prime minister's use of the Diplomatic Protection Service, I think it's actually called, because the allegation is he likes to have an entourage, and so he has this rather large security detail following him around everywhere, even though there's really no threats to the prime minister of New Zealand domestically. I mean, come on. And even around the precincts of parliament, which are secure. And so he's been criticized for that and for the enormous cost and the huge budget blowout in the Diplomatic Protection Service, the squad or whatever the heck it is. And so he's saying now that that's what his comments were about. And that's just nonsense, because if that were the case, it would be that his security squad had been reduced. And then he might be able to blame the lack of security on Labour, which is just dumb because he wouldn't do what Labour wants anyway. So I don't want to call the prime minister a liar, but I'm sorry, I think he is lying. And two members of the Labour caucus called the prime minister a scumbag in the House, and one of them stood up and he apologized and withdrew the remark. When one of the national MPs was all self-righteous and, "Oh my God, this is the worst thing that anyone has ever called a prime minister. You can't call the prime minister," carrying on this fake emotion as they do in parliament. And so Trevor Mallard, who's one of the senior Labour MPs and also the leader of their campaign, did stand up and apologize. But later on, it was revealed that the deputy leader of the opposition, Annette King, had also called the prime minister a scumbag, and she later said, "No, I'm not going to apologize." And I'm on her side on this, because I don't think that there's any particular reason why she should. What the prime minister did was despicable, and if he won't, as the current phrase loves to have it, if he won't man up to it and apologize, then and now actually try to change the fact after the fact, then he is a scumbag, and she has every right to call him that. And I'm sorry, I'm on her side. Mind you, I don't like John Key, but anyway. But this kind of gets to a larger issue, that there is a distinct media favoritism toward John Key in particular in the New Zealand media. There, the same day that New Zealand received its double credit rating downgrade, he had a free hour on Radio Live, which is one of the chains of radio stations in New Zealand. And he was told that he couldn't talk about politics during that hour. But he's still prime minister. He's still well known. It amounts to an hour-long commercial, whether he talks about politics or not. Now, the Radio Live says that they intended doing that as an annual thing, whoever happens to be prime minister at the time. Right. I so believe them. This is, at that point, it was about 7 weeks or so out from the election. And they give the sitting prime minister an hour of free time on the radio to just be schmoozy and funny and nice and all that stuff. If that's not a blatant attempt to promote John Key, I don't know what is. Now, as it happens, the company that owns Radio Live is MediaWorks, which received $43 million in government loans or guarantees to prop them up because they're not doing well. So they have a strong vested financial interest in promoting John Key and his national party. So if they expect me to believe that that was part of something that they've been planning and they thought that they would do every year with whoever happens to be prime minister, I'm not buying that. I think that it was done deliberately to promote John Key, and I have seen nothing to make me think otherwise. Now, as it happens, the country's largest newspaper, the New Zealand Herald, has just given a column to a man who has a huge grudge against Labour and a strong interest in promoting the National Party. His name is Owen Glenn, and he hasn't lived in New Zealand since 1966, but he's apparently a billionaire, or millionaire anyway, and he's known for his philanthropy. Among other things, he gave $1 million to Christchurch after the earthquake, you know, good on him. He gave something like $7.5 million for a new building for the business school at Auckland University, which is apparently the largest private donation to a university ever. You know, good on him for that as well. And he's done other things philanthropically around the world. And good on him for that. That's all wonderful. But that doesn't give him the right to attack the Labour Party and to promote the National Party without being held to account for that. Just because you're a good philanthropist, that doesn't give you a shield from criticism. If I or anyone else feels he's wrong about something, we have every right to criticize him and his opinions, and not to pull back just because he's this philanthropist. If he wants to be a politician, then he has to expect that he's going to receive criticism as a politician. If he doesn't like that, he shouldn't interfere in politics. It does smack of this ultra-rich guy trying to meddle in New Zealand politics when he doesn't even live here anymore. I don't have any problem with him criticizing New Zealand or New Zealand politics. Obviously, I don't. He's entitled to his opinion. He's entitled to express them. But when he dabbles a little too far, it starts to cross the line. And the Herald giving him a free forum to promote the National Party and John Key goes a bit too far to the end of being pro-national and anti-Labour. As this guy is now. And particularly because when he said he was going to give, something like $1 million to schools in New Zealand if National wins the next election. That is a crime under New Zealand law to say that kind of thing. It violates the Electoral Act. And he won't be prosecuted, of course, because he's a philanthropist. He gives all this money away. So he's beyond reproach. And that is really what irritates me more than what he said or his opinions or the fact that he's just got this vendetta against Labour and this grudge that he's playing out publicly. I don't really care about any of that. I don't think he's a nice man personally. From what I've seen of him in the media, I don't know him, obviously. But this idea that because he's given so much money, he is untouchable, you cannot criticize him, is just offensive to me. In a democracy, it's offensive that there would be anybody who's above criticism or beyond the reach of criticism. Which brings me to a similar case that happened recently. There's this guy in New Zealand known as the Mad Butcher, because that's what he was a butcher, but he has this chain of franchised butcher shops called the Mad Butcher. And his real name is Peter Leach. He was knighted in the last go-round of, I think it was this year, maybe it was the year before, of honors lists. So he's now Sir Peter Leach, but he's kind of a working class hero because he grew up and was blue collar and all that, and he's a big backer of rugby league, which is more of the blue collar variant of rugby. There's several variants of rugby. Rugby union, as it's often called, is the original one, and from that came rugby league, Aussie rules football, and American football all are descended from rugby, and. Rugby league, I don't know why exactly, but it is probably traditionally been more blue-collar, working class, and even brown than has rugby. And I don't know why. But anyway, he's been a big backer of that and also some other charities here and there. But he went on this effort or whatever lately where he brought up John Key at every opportunity and talked about how wonderful he is, how what a great guy he is, and how National is so wonderful and how it would be a crime not to reelect the national government. He's saying this on radio interview shows. Now, he's entitled to his opinion. Absolutely, he's entitled to his opinion. The fact that I think he's betraying his working class roots is beside the point for this discussion. He's allowed to have those opinions. Well, one of the Labour MPs said on her Facebook discussion page or whatever that she wasn't going to support any supporter of the Tories. Conservatives are often called Tories. It comes from actually Britain, not from us. But anyway. And the right went absolutely apoplectic over that, that she was attacking the Mad Butcher. Now, first of all, saying that she wasn't going to patronize somebody who was supporting the Tories is not the same as attacking him. It's not overlooking any of the good deeds he's done in his time. It's not saying he's not entitled to his opinion. She's stating her preference that she would not choose to patronize a business that supports the Tories. She's entitled to do that in a democracy. She's entitled to say that in a democracy, but not to the right. To the right, any criticism of the Mad Butcher for his support of John Key was an attack. And it just got really stupid really fast with these right-wing bloggers in particular pushing this meme about how Labour was attacking Peter Leach. And it just went on for days. And it was the same sort of thing. This is before the Owen Glenn issue. The same sort of thing that because he has been so good about League in particular, but also other charities, that therefore you cannot criticize him. And I'm sorry, if he says something stupid, he's every bit as much liable to be called out on it as anybody else is. The fact that he's done good things in the past doesn't give him a free ride to say whatever he wants. If people disagree with him, they have absolutely every right to talk back, which in a roundabout way gets back to what was the last episode I posted, which was talking about this sort of thing, about outsiders criticizing. Now, in the case of the Mad Butcher, he's an outsider only because he's a business person, not a politician, whereas Owen Glenn actually is an expat who hasn't lived in New Zealand since 1966. But again, in both cases, the issue is not whether or not they have the right to criticize. Of course they do. The issue is, do they have a right to be free from criticism of their positions or whatever? And the answer is absolutely not. If you say something in a democracy, you have to expect that somebody else is going to say something too. And that's what it all boils down to. And that was the gist of what I was trying to get at in that episode two episodes ago, that people who live, like me, who live overseas, may criticize their homeland, but that doesn't mean that nobody else can't take issue with what we say. Obviously, they can. And we have to expect that. Anytime anybody in a democracy opens their mouth about a public issue, they have to expect that somebody's going to disagree with them and is going to be upfront and open about that. Now, one of the things I didn't say in that episode, and I meant to make it more clear, is that my starting point in that whole discussion was talking about something that Auntie Vera had said on his show. And I meant to be clearer about saying that in that show, Auntie Vera said it was a stupid thing to be thinking that somebody who lives overseas shouldn't criticize and so on, and was not trying to promote that as his view or as a legitimate opinion, but he was just sharing that that's the way he felt. And I fully respect that, and I certainly didn't mean to imply that Auntie Vera felt that no one who lives overseas should criticize the U.S., because that's absolutely not the case. I just was using that as a specific starting point to talk about that whole topic. And I wanted to clarify that because I don't think it was clear enough when I talked about that episode, which is actually a good point now to go on to the comments with the first one that's related to that, and it's from Kyle in Hawaii.
Hey, Arthur, it's Kyle in Hawaii. Just listened to your recent podcast and the bit about in response to expats' opinions when it comes to their previous country of origin. And then an overall statement of everybody has a valid opinion to comment on the politics or the cultural sensitivities around the world, really. Everybody has a valid opinion, given their own experience, but there's different degrees of legitimacy to things people bring up, because there seems to be an oversimplification, I think, especially in American politics, because we seem to be very American-centric with our coverage of our benefits to the world. We seem to outplay more of that than our detriment to our interactions with other countries around the world. It's not a very whole view, in my opinion. And that's not all. That's not to say that all the media stations subscribe to that status quo, but I think it's a generalization that is valid, that Americans tend to be very centrist when it comes to America, and very defensive when anybody outside of America, even if it's the Hawaiian Islands, for instance, or territories of the United States, whether they have the right to comment about or even debate certain things. So I don't necessarily agree with that. And I agreed with your point of view wholly, actually. And I love your podcast. I hope this was succinct enough. Hope you guys had a good time in Pride 48. I'm sorry I couldn't participate. Have a good one. Bye.
Well, thanks for that, Kyle. Good to hear from you again. It's been a while. And I was just thinking recently that I hadn't heard from you, and then I suddenly remembered that I could check on Facebook to see what you're up to. And then that reminded me that I very seldom use Facebook for anything anymore. So, hey, you get that, don't you? But you actually reminded me of something that I don't think I mentioned in that episode. And that is that something that annoys me as an American living overseas is when people here in New Zealand criticize the U.S. and they don't know what they're talking about. And I don't mean that I disagree with them, although I probably do, but that they get something that's factually wrong, or they say something that's just, it's obviously partisan, but not factual. I mean, that sort of thing annoys me when people in the U.S. do that, when they say something that's partisan, but wrong. And that annoys me over here as well, particularly because in this day and age, with the internet, there's really no reason not to know what facts are, because facts are facts. As I often say, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but people are not entitled to their own facts. And it's simple enough to find out what the real story is without making stuff up. Because with any country, if you want to focus on only the bad things, you can find things that are really bad. There's no reason to exaggerate them, because usually the bad things are bad enough as it is. Same with the U.S., of course. And I do think that people have an obligation to try to be factually correct as much as possible, which is something that I always try to do in any of the political shows I do or that I take part in. And sometimes it's a lonely mission. But thanks, Kyle, sincerely. It really is good to hear from you again. And on to the next call. This is now moving to the Pride 48 episode, and this is from Roger Green.
Hi, Arthur. This is Roger. I liked about 50 minutes of your show, your live show, but I think you need to be less Switzerland, I think. I think particularly those periods when you can't hear what's going on. So if you can't hear it, then we can't hear it. So when we listen to you not being able to hear it, it was sort of, well, frustrating. But the stuff that was good was really good. And the Archer stuff, particularly the end part where you're went off with Arthur at the end, at the end was really quite good. So that was, I mostly liked it. But particularly when it's your show, dead air is just deadly to listen to. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Roger, and you're absolutely right. That particular episode was completely unedited. I just basically slapped the album art on it and posted it. Part of it is because I was still doing Pride 48 stuff, and I just wanted to go ahead and post it and get it done with. But also because I don't know why, but for some reason I had it in my head that I shouldn't alter what had been broadcast, even though I have previous years. I didn't. But there's two things. When one is recording, it's very difficult to know how the recording sounds. Well, I don't know what it's going to sound like, what the recording is going to sound like, because what I hear in my ears is not what is in the file that's recorded. And very often things can be heard that I don't hear, or I suppose vice versa. So that was part of it, and I didn't have time to listen to the whole thing back to double-check that. But the other thing is that with virtually every episode of either podcast that I've released, I do edit out dead space. And if I had gone back and edited that episode, I would have done that as well. I might have even cut out most of that cross to Vegas because of that. And, hindsight's always a wonderful thing. But it is something that I normally do. Removing dead space from a recorded podcast is something I normally do. But it's also one of the reasons why I haven't pursued doing more live podcasting yet, because looking back at the live shows that I used to do, the ones that worked were the ones that I had the most control over. And I don't necessarily mean control in terms of telling people to speak or not speak or whatever. I mean in the sense of having control over the topic. And there were a few that I had that were on specific topics, and I had some questions prepared or that I would come up with on the fly, and I would ask people about as we were going along, so I kept it focused on whatever it was supposed to be about. The least successful ones were the ones that were just kind of freeform, and people just talked about whatever they did. And the Vegas portion of that particular episode was more like the freeform kind, where there was no structure. And then the other part, where it was just Archer and me, was basically more of what I had, the old live shows that worked, where they were more focused on just a discussion. It's easier to have a freeform discussion with two people. When you have more than two people, you really can't have a freeform discussion without some sort of focus, I have found. And I want to get that right before I do any more live shows, which means that I have to have the time to prepare, which is was part of my downfall the last time I was doing live shows, which I guess was the second time technically. And that was because I didn't have time to prepare the shows adequately. And so I'm not going to proceed with any live shows until I have the opportunity to prepare and to have it ready to go, so that I can avoid exactly the sorts of issues that you're talking about, the dead air, where the show just kind of stops. And when the live shows do resume, they will not be like that, I hope. Or if they are, I'll edit them out later. And by the way, this all has a lot to do with the folks, with a lot of the soul searching, if you will, that's been going on since Pride 48. I've listened to several podcasts now where the folks have been talking about it. Mark from Musings of a Tech Writer was talking about doing a reboot, basically deleted all those old episodes and sort of starting from scratch in a sense. And I'm not going that far, obviously, but I certainly can see the value of that. And I don't see anything wrong with from time to time kind of refreshing a show and trying to make it more, well, where you're at the moment, I suppose, because podcasting is a very personal medium because of the human voice. And so I don't see any reason to keep it static in time, but to learn from one's own mistakes and to learn from others and try to make things better. And the whole process of the live shows has been a different sort of learning process than these recorded shows. But I certainly, I agree completely with what you said, Roger, and I have obviously taken that to heart, and it will be part of my consideration when the live shows return. So thanks again for that, Roger. And now it's on to the next call.
Hello, Arthur. It's the Faye driver. I'm just sitting in the Las Vegas airport on my way home. It is the day after the end of Pride 48, and I just wanted to thank you very much for everything that you did and all the work you put in and for everything you did to help the non-Vegas podcasters. So thank you for that, and it's very exciting to hear that we may see you next year. I hope that all works out. All right, so take care, and we'll see you in about a year. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that, Ange. And his podcast is called Pink Wheel Nuts, which you can find through iTunes, part of the Pride 48 family of podcasters. And he, among other things, he ran a shuttle in Las Vegas for the podcasters who were there and the people participating in the Pride 48 event. And I honestly cannot remember what I mentioned on this podcast and what I didn't, but the plan is at this stage that we will be in Las Vegas for Pride 48 next year. Pride 48 2012. We'll see how the stars align, but that is definitely the plan, and we're working toward that. I have a few ducks to get in a row, as it were, but that is certainly the plan. My role in Pride 48 this year was to coordinate, as Andrew was saying, the non-Vegas people, all the people from other parts of the world who did shows from, as they normally did during previous marathons from wherever they're located. And for the most part, that worked out brilliantly. There was only one show that didn't air for some reason. And Scotty, the little Aussie battler, stepped up and filled in. Took, I think it was about another half an hour or so of that time slot and filled it. And that was just brilliant. And certainly it's something I appreciate very much. I want to give a public shout out to Scotty for having done that, because that was really good. But yeah, that's it about that. And now on to the final call.
Hey, Arthur, this is Tom, a.k.a. the Ramble Redhead. Just want to give you a quick call to let you know that I wanted to say a big, 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 huge thank you to you for all your efforts in helping make Pride 48 Las Vegas and happen this weekend. I'm just now getting home. It's almost 1 a.m. in the morning on Tuesday now, but I'm on the way home, and I just wanted to say that I had such an amazing time. And I wanted to thank you for your part of it. You know that I adore you, and I think you're amazing. And I'm holding you to it for next year that you and Nigel are going to be there, so I can give you another big old hug in person. So I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for what you did to help make this possible. And then, of course, to Daniel and Adam and Joey and all the other people that got involved and helped make this be the big event that it was. And it was one of the highlights of my life. Especially for this year, it's just so fucking amazing, and so pardon my language, but that's the only way to describe it. Okay. Well, anyway, you be good, keep up the great work, and I will talk to you again not soon, I'm sure. So, and I have to end this like I always do because people think I'm sick if I don't. Okay, rabblerizzo.com. All right, bye bye.
Well, thanks for that, Tom, and. Of course, Tom, as I think I've mentioned before, is the only podcaster I've met in real life. And now that everyone at Pride 48 this year in Vegas met him, there's one degree of separation between me and them, which is kind of an interesting thought in itself. And of course, next year, that degree will disappear. Or at least that's the plan. But thank you for the call, Tom. And during the call, he mentioned several people. Joy from Cocktails and Cream Puffs, who did a lot of the hotel organizing side of things. And I didn't have anything to do with that, so I obviously wasn't working with him on that. But I was working with Adam from Dubious Intent Plus, formerly the Adam and Maddie Show, and one of the co-founders of Pride 48. He, among other things, did the PC training for the people who were not in Vegas, because I don't have a PC anymore, and I don't know. Basically, I don't know how to do the stream from a PC, and so he coordinated that and got people set up and trained and so on. So huge props to him for that. And then also, of course, Daniel Brewer, who's the other co-founder of Pride 48 and a good friend of mine. He's always been supportive and helpful for me over the years and has become a really good friend, and I'm very much looking forward. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting everybody, but Daniel in particular, because I haven't met him, obviously. Well, yeah, no, it is obvious because otherwise then Tom wouldn't be the only one I've ever met. But we work so closely together with these Pride 48s over the past 3 years now that I'm really quite looking forward to meeting him in person. But that is it for today. I will probably be back later this week. I say probably because, hey, you just never know these days. And with a normal episode, a shorter episode, no doubt. Oh, and Sunny makes her appearance. I thought I was going to get through an entire episode without Sunny barking, but no. Oh, well. A last-minute appearance. Last-minute guest appearance by Sunny. That's it for today. Hopefully, I'll be back next week. If not, I will talk to you when I talk to you. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.